This episode contains descriptions of the loss of a child, but that happens around the 41-minute mark. Take care while listening.
What is your favorite shark joke?
My favorite shark joke? I don't have to outswim the shark. I just have to outswim you.
I bet you could tell from his accent, but Dave Pearson is Australian. And like any good Australian who lives by the beach.
I started surfing when I was probably about 10 years old, maybe. Being Australia, you have to go to the beach. And my big brother started surfing. So if your brother starts surfing, then you're going to do the same thing. So I would have been 10 years old when I started to actually stand on my feet on a surfboard and really enjoy it.
In 2011, Dave was living with his partner, Deb, on the east coast of Australia.
Yeah, same as everyone. Get up in the morning, go to work, come home in the afternoon. But yeah, just normal life. Couple of kids. By then, my son was about 23. He was living in South Australia. My daughter was 17 and living with me at the time still.
And Dave would get out in the water on his board any chance he got.
How big of a concern were sharks?
Probably less than zero. You hardly ever used to see sharks around here. I've probably only seen maybe 4 sharks in the water over the, 30 years I've been surfing in this area. Not really on my radar, I would say, sharks.
But his radar was about to change drastically.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul.
On March 23rd, 2011, Dave went to Crowdy Head to surf after work, just like any other day.
Who was with you?
My neighbor Scotty. I rang him up on the way home from work. I'd actually picked up a new surfboard the day before, and I rang him on the way home and just said, "Look, I'm going for a surf. If you want to come out, I'll pick you up when I get home." We got down the beach. And we met up with another friend of ours who just turned up at the same time called Sean, and out where we were going to go surf to was one other guy called Aaron. So he was out in the water. So the three of us basically paddled out together. I was a little bit in front of him because obviously I was a bit keener than them because I had a new board to try out.
Dave got out there first and caught a wave before the other guys were even in the water. He was excited about how his new board was feeling under his feet.
Had a grin on my face as I was paddling back out after that one. So I was, I guess, out of the four of us, I was now the one furthest away from the rocks and further down the beach. And I was paddling back out in the rip. So I was probably, I would say, looking at it maybe 60, 70 meters away from the guys. I was luckily looking over kind of to my left-hand side where they were as I was paddling out. And the shark came from just off to the right-hand side of my board. And it came charging up, and I was pretty fortunate. It missed my right arm, and its bottom jaw hit the surfboard, and its nose sort of hit me in the side of the head. And then it flipped out of the water, and because I was paddling, my left arm had gone forward, and its top jaw came down on my left arm.
So it's a sandwich of the shark's top jaw, Dave's arm, the surfboard, and the shark's bottom jaw.
And as it flipped out of the water, it then had my surfboard and my arm, and it took down to the bottom, so I went back down underwater with it. And Aaron said he heard a very loud smacking noise and looked over, and what he thought he was looking at was a dolphin that had jumped out of the water and was going back in the water. And he said he was thinking to himself, but wasn't Dave paddling out there a minute ago?
But now, having been dragged underwater, he was nowhere to be seen.
But while I was underwater, I didn't really see much. A lot of bubbles. There was something big in front of me. Our eyes don't work well underwater, which I'm kind of pretty happy about. We sort of parted ways. I didn't fight it off. I didn't do anything. But all I do remember is when it released my arm, swam back to the surface, and Aaron said he'd seen my board pop up first, followed a few seconds later by myself, and I climbed back on the surfboard, and he said I was just sitting there looking at my arm, and what I recall is I was looking down at my left arm, and all of the forearm muscle was now hanging off on the inside of my arm, and there was blood squirting quite a distance away. And I remember looking down thinking, well, bones really are white. And I was looking at the water going red around where I was sitting and how far the blood was squirting. And I remember saying to myself, wow, that's not good. So I tried to grab hold of my arm as tight as I could to slow the bleeding down. And I remember it squirting between my fingers. And I thought, I've got to get out of here, and I've got to get something to stop this bleeding. And I became aware of Aaron was shouting at me. And apparently the boys said he was screaming, Dave, was that a shark? Was that a shark? Yes, he swore at me. And I said, yes, it was a shark. And as I was looking at the water underneath, and this was a 3-meter shark. So they're fairly sizable. And it's like sitting on your surfboard looking at a, you know, 44-gallon drum swimming around underneath you. They are big. I said to the boys, it's still here underneath me. I said, I'll paddle to the beach and I'll meet you on the sand. So I proceeded to sort of put all my weight, I bent my arm as tight as I could to try and stop the bleeding. I had no idea what I was trying to do, but I was just trying to pinch the artery off somehow, and put all my weight on it, laid on my arm on the surfboard, and started paddling one armed in. And the next wave that come through was a good size wave, and I thought, beauty, I'll get out on this. But because I was paddling out in the rip, I wasn't in the right spot, and the wave basically just picked me up and drove me back down under the water. And I got separated from my board again. And as I come back to the surface, I was trying to obviously hang onto my arm and try to stop the bleeding any way I could. And then the next wave hit me on the head, and then the one after that and the one after that. So I was basically drowning then. And when you have a what's called a shallow water blackout, you see stars first. Then your eyes, your vision starts closing in as you're going out of consciousness. And my vision was closing in. I thought, wow, I'm just about to die. And I thought, wow, that's enlightening that today is the day I die. And I was quite okay with that. So that was another surprise, is how calm I was, knowing that I'm got no air left and I'm underwater and I'm just about to drown. And I thought, well, I've had a pretty good life. It's no shame to die in the ocean, and it's been a nice place for me. So I'd accepted that.
But then he remembered what he had to live for.
You know, I was thinking about my kids and my partner, and I just thought, you know what, not today, Dave. As I sort of said that, I felt the sand under my feet and then just pushed as hard as I could and come back to the surface and sucked in a big breath of air. And luckily my leg rope was still attached. So I pulled the board back to me, laid back on it, tucked all the skin back together and the muscles, and then tried to put all my weight on it. And it was then that I heard Aaron and my other mate, Sean, behind me. And he said, come on, Dave, we're going to get you out. And I went, thank you so much. By then I was buggered. I had no strength left. The adrenaline had wore off. You know, when you lose a lot of blood, you've got nothing to fight with. And yeah, thankfully it did take them a little bit of time to paddle me in, but they got me in because we were still getting dragged out by the rip. That's why we use the rip to paddle out in. So they were fighting against that, and they got me back to the beach.
To add insult to injury,
I remember looking at the nose of my surfboard as I was bouncing in on the wave to the beach, and it was all the fiberglass was peeling off the surface, and I went, wow, you know, it's ruined my board as well. And so we got to the beach, and I remember Sean saying straight away, get his leg rope, we'll use that as a tourniquet. And Aaron said, got to lift his arm above his heart, he's bleeding way too much. And so they were straight into first aid mode, which for me was good, because that's, in a crisis, that's usually my role. I'm the one who usually takes charge of that. And I was in no state to do that. And to hear reassuring things, knowing that what they were actually saying is stuff that I would be doing anyway, it was really welcoming to hear that. And I remember Aaron saying to one of the young guys that had come running up the beach, go and ring 000.
That's the Australian 911.
We're going to need a helicopter here because Dave's been attacked and he's not good. And this young guy was actually went to school with my daughter. He did that. He rang for a helicopter. He actually rang my daughter as well and let her know what had happened. When we got out of the surf, I sort of said to the guys, look, I'll be right. I'll walk. And they kind of dragged me up the sand, up the rocks, and threw me on a picnic table and my neighbor who I took to the beach, Scotty, he grabbed hold of my bicep and was squeezing as tight as he could to obviously to reduce more of the blood flow out. The paramedics later told me that by then I'd probably lost 40% of my blood anyway. So it's about 40 to 45 is when you die. So I guess I wasn't good, and I didn't feel good once I laid on the picnic table. You know, the adrenaline completely wears off, and there was still no pain then, which is the best thing. That's what I'm thankful for. There was no real pain until a little while afterwards. By then, the guys had a tourniquet on my arm. They'd wrapped the wound up on my arm in a towel so that nobody could really see it, least of all me. And I kind of laid there and took count of my own vital signs. I was taking my heartbeat, and I realized my heart was, this is a good 15, 20 minutes of laying on the table, my heart was over 200 beats a minute, which kind of told me that, you know, I've lost a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And as the time went on, I could feel like my feet were already tingling and my legs were going numb, and it wasn't that cold, so it was going numb because of running out of blood. I remember laying there thinking, wow, this isn't good. And I'd already asked my mate Sean if he could ring Deb up, because she knew I would be due home, and just let her know that there'd been an incident and that I was still alive. And he just said to her, you're going to have to get down here straight away. And to which she did. She come straight from home down to the beach.
Dave wanted Deb there, not just for emotional support.
Because I knew Deb being an assistant nurse, she would be able to help the guys. And Adam, we got Adam over from the surf club, and Adam had also rang his sister, who's also a nurse, and he had the first aid gear. So he gave me oxygen straight away, which is one way to fight off shock, is by making sure you're getting plenty of oxygen in the system. So yeah, everybody did everything right.
What were the first few moments when your partner got there and saw what was going on? What were those like?
Well, number one, because it was my turn to cook dinner, she said, you'll do anything to get out of cooking dinner. No, she was, the mood as soon as she got there, I saw on the guys' faces, was that Deb's here now. He's her problem.
But in the way of like, oh, thank God, a more qualified person is in charge now. Because they knew from the start that it would take any emergency medical help a while to get there.
It was at least more than 45 minutes before the ambulance got there. That's how far we live away from the local hospital. The ambulances apparently had been at a car accident. We're not in a huge town or a big city. We're in a little regional area. And the helicopter was on its way from Newcastle, which is a two-hour drive away, which is, once again, another 45-minute helicopter trip. And it was unloading a passenger when they got the call. So they had to get rid of the passenger they had on board and then fly up to us.
Was there any discussion while you were waiting for emergency services of just like, let's pack them up in the car, let's drive them ourselves?
It was one quick discussion that they had. And then I've also heard of the stories where the ambulance goes flying past the car going the other way. And so the ambulance keeps going to the scene of the accident or wherever.
Right.
And the people with the patient go the other way, and the patient dies because he missed out on the help. But I remember laying on the table talking to my partner as the sun was setting, and it was a beautiful sunset. And I remember saying to her, well, it's not a bad night to die anyway, so it's a good night. I was trying to keep everyone happy by cracking a few jokes, and I apologized to everyone for ruining the afternoon. And all them guys were absolutely brilliant. And it was, you know, I said to him at one stage, look, guys, I know I'm not well here, and if I die, it's of no fault of yours. Thank you for getting me this far. You know, I've known these guys for a while, and as much as we all guys have an argument with each other from time to time, they think enough of me to actually save my life. So I'm pretty grateful for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a pretty hectic afternoon. Once the paramedics got there, they then worked on stabilizing my heart. They pumped bags of fluid in me, and I think they were working on me for probably an hour and a half.
Okay, so you're laying there, you're cracking jokes and everything, but are you thinking like, I'm gonna survive this, or I'm really gonna die?
Once the paramedics got there, my concern level reduced quite a lot. I knew I still wasn't healthy, and that was confirmed later on with a discussion with the paramedics. They actually said at one, when they first got there, they were 50-50 whether I'd actually get up off that table, which was a surprise to me, because I thought once they got there, I was fine. And then I heard the helicopter coming in, and I went, you know what, things are feeling much better now. And
Once he was stable enough to be moved, they loaded him into a helicopter and took him to the hospital in Newcastle.
I remember the helicopter pilot says we'll be landing, and he said, you see all them lights down there? Well, I was on my back looking up, and I said, no. And he said to Deb, you see all them lights? He said, they're all news crews for Dave. And I went, you're kidding me. And there was like 20 news crews already at the hospital by the time we got there.
Wow.
And that was because it was probably 9 or 9.30 when we got there. So that was a good 4 hours after my shark attack by the time we actually got to the hospital. So that gave everybody plenty of time to, I guess, scramble their reporters up and get them there. And which I'm pretty grateful for that, because I've got some footage of us getting out of the ambulance. I remember it shows on the footage, I actually lifted my head up. And now when I see the exact same thing, when I see a shark attack and they're wheeling somebody out of the ambulance and I see them lift their head up, regardless of what other damage has happened to them, I know if you can lift your head off that pillow, then you're not close to death.
We're going to be right back. Doctors started assessing Dave's situation, and obviously his arm was the most glaring injury, but also...
because the shark hit me in the side of the head, and it was a significant hit. It split me right down here. Like there's a photo floating around somewhere. I got a black eye and a big split down the side of my head. It actually fractured two vertebrae in my neck at the same time. It's like a whiplash type injury from where its head hit me. They start cleaning me up a bit, I guess, washing some of the blood off. They said, we're going to need to get some x-rays to see what other damage you've got, because the boys had actually thought I'd broken my wrist as well, because when they were tying up my arm, my left wrist was just hanging limp. And they said, he must have broken his wrist. So they took me for x-rays. And what had actually happened, it was the tendons had been cut across the top of my wrist. Also, my forearm muscle was completely severed, so there was no strength in my forearm to hold my hand up either. That was then where the first doctor told me that there was a good chance that I would lose my arm. I said, but I can still wiggle my fingers. And he goes, yeah, he said, that's not the issue. He said, the shark's teeth have damaged your bone. And if it gets infected, then you'll die. And he said, number one is we've got to save your life. And I said, well, if that's what's got to be, that's what it's got to be. It was my left arm anyway. I'm right-handed, so I kind of didn't think it would make a huge amount of difference to my life. But, you know, now that I know people who have missing arms and missing, you know, I would go, yes, it would have made a massive difference in my life. So I'm really appreciative.
Yeah. And, but you're coming back from like thinking you were dead.
That's right. Yeah. So
what's an arm?
I was positive. I was still alive. That's right. What's an arm? Yeah. You know, by now, this was probably 1 o'clock in the morning. And he said, we've got another specialist surgeon coming on at 6 o'clock. He said, would you like to wait and see what he thinks? And I said, if there's a chance of saving my arm, definitely. Then a nurse said to me, so you think you'll surf again? And I went, I hadn't, to that point, it was something that I hadn't thought. And I said, of course I will. I said, my love of the ocean is far greater than any fear I have of sharks. And I guess it was that one question and that one comment that was my drive to get back in the ocean. Because I'd said that straight away at what you would probably consider the worst possible time, where I've just survived. I've just been told they're going to cut my arm off. But will you surf again? And I went, yeah, I will.
So they waited for the other doctor to get there.
I remember being wheeled up to surgery and got introduced to the new doctor, Dr. Gill, his name was. He said, let's have a go and see if we can save this arm, shall we? And I said, yes, please. He said, but if you wake up, he said, please don't be alarmed if you don't have an arm. And I went, right, I can live with that. And as it was, you know, I remember I wake up in the recovery section of the emergency and started arguing with the staff. Apparently it's reasonably common for stupid men to argue when they come out. And I said, you know, what am I doing here? What am I doing? And she goes, you've been attacked by a shark. And I goes, bullshit. And there's nothing. What have you done to me? What have you done to me? And I remember something happened and my left arm was absolutely killing me. And I looked down and my whole left arm was bandaged up. And it was then a dawn on me. And I went, I've still got an arm. And they said, yeah, you still got an arm. And I went, now I know what's happened. And I went, wow. He said, how good's that? I've got an arm. And they wheeled me out of surgery back to a room. And as I'm going down, one of my old workmates who I hadn't seen for years, his mum was actually in hospital. And he goes, Pierce, what are you doing here? And I just held up my left arm and I just went, shark attack, and just dropped my arm down. And just, yeah, it was quite a funny thing, you know, like it, just like it was an everyday thing. I've been a shark attack. It's all right, just a shark attack, yeah.
As Dave saw when he got to the hospital, his attack was big news. And when dozens of outlets are trying to get the same story, they can be relentless.
It was frantic. Everybody wanted a news story from it. I didn't even know hospitals had a media section, but there is a media liaison in a hospital. And she came with a printed out sheet that had 40 different offers from different news stations, what they would offer me to talk to them. My partner, every time her and her daughter were coming to see me in hospital, they were accosted out the front because obviously from the previous footage, they know who she was. My daughter and her boyfriend came down and my mum and dad, they were just getting hassled. So I think one news crew asked my daughter's friend if she would break into her house and get the surfboard out of the house for her so they could get a bit of footage of the surfboard. And she said, I can't do that. I can't break into someone's house. And these are like 13, 14-year-old girls, you know. So one of the news reporters had actually rung my son who lived in South Australia, which is a 5.5-hour flight away from where I was. He said to me, like on their piece of paper said, I will fly your son back from South Australia so that he can be with you. And obviously it's good for their story as well. I said to the hospital staff, if I talk to this guy, we'll do one interview and then you got to tell everyone else to go. You got to get on with your business of running a hospital and we don't need this circus all the time. This is the day afterwards. Like I got out of surgery. This was the following day after coming out of surgery. And when we did meet him, he was a really nice guy and became a friend of ours for quite a while. Just as crossed to the hospital bed with his camera and he asked me the first question. I think it might have been Deb started bawling, like she started crying. And then my daughter did, and then I did. And I went, well, this wasn't what I wanted to do. But anyway, you got that on TV for you. My son flew back from South Australia with his new girlfriend, who then became his fiancée and wife, and now the mother of my grandchildren. So not the best conditions to meet someone for the first time, but it was nice of him to get over here and with her and so she could see meet us as well, meet the rest of the family.
While his family had been kept informed about Dave's situation, his friends had not. All they had to go on was what the news was reporting, and that wasn't always factual information.
My partner brought down my laptop. She said, look, the guys you used to work with are all chasing me up. They all want to know how you're doing. She said, so here's your laptop. Let the guys know how you're doing. And that was a good and a bad thing. Because I remember I opened up my emails first and there was a whole email trail that went for, you know, maybe 2 days. And the first one, like you scroll to the bottom and the first comment was, hey, I've heard Dave's been attacked by a shark and he's lost an arm and a leg. And then, you know, there was, wow, I hope he's going to be all right. Then the next comment was, I think the newspaper got it wrong. He hasn't lost an arm and a leg. He's in hospital, but he's lost an arm. And then the next one was, no, they've saved his arm. So I was just reading all of that and the progression from the guys. And then when I got to the last comment, it was one of the guys called Andrew said, so is it too early to start cracking jokes? And I thought that's typical of, you know, Aussie blokes is take the piss out of each other and, you know, have some fun at my expense.
Yeah.
So my first comment to the whole lot was, hi guys, I'm in hospital. Yes, I've saved my arm. I'm not feeling very well, but I'm alive and I'm doing okay. And no, it's not too early to start cracking jokes. Bring them on. So from then on, it was, they all felt better because, you know, number one, I was alive, but they could have a bit of a joke at me.
Yeah. Not to be morbid, but like my mom passed away 2 years ago and my friends and I make dead mom jokes all the time. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. But like, if I'm not laughing about it, I'm going to cry. Thank you. But like, I understand the need to make jokes about tragedy because otherwise you're just crying all the time.
And that's 100% correct. Yeah. If I'm, yeah, that's right. I remember saying that. I say that a lot. If I'm not going to laugh about this, I'm going to cry about it. I'd much rather be laughing.
After Dave checked in with his friends, he decided to see what the news was saying about his attack. And then he looked at the comments.
And it was like, this guy's going to be going out killing all the sharks now. And then, what did he think he was doing, surfing in the dark? Because the first photos of getting me off a helicopter were 4 hours after the attack. And it's in the dark, obviously, 9 o'clock at night. And so I went, hey guys, this is Dave. You know, this is me. I wasn't surfing at night. It was in the afternoon. It just I happened to say that we spent 3 hours on the beach afterwards, getting me stable enough to move to the hospital, which is where you saw the photo. And then it was, the comments just got worse and worse. It was like, so you're going to blame, you're blaming all the sharks now, I hear, and, you know, you're going to go out and kill them all. And I'm going, no, I said, I'm pretty indifferent to sharks. So I've always left them alone. Hopefully that they would leave me alone. And then it was, it's your fault that we've got shark nets, and it's your fault that sharks get killed. And they go, hang on, guys, it's not my fault. You know, like, the more I was
trying. This happened like 24 hours ago. How could I have already affected any change?
And then it was another comment, and they said, I just wish you'd have died. And I'm like, wow. And I went, wow. I said, and the comment to that was, I said, yesterday I was a pretty good guy, and today I seem to be everybody's worst enemy. I said, you lot can go and get fucked. And that was it. And everybody's comment had to be derogatory against myself, like personally against me. And I'm going, well, hang on, like, you don't even know me. Why would you do this? And it's tough. Like, it was tough to me. And I remember closing the laptop. I slammed my laptop because that's the only thing I could do to get rid of my aggression. Slammed the laptop down. And I had tears running down my face, and I went, wow, like, this is tough. And that was, I'd have to say, sometimes that's been tougher than the actual attack.
After a week in the hospital, Dave was cleared to go home. Obviously, he didn't have use of his left arm while it was healing, which made going back to work a bit of a challenge.
My work were brilliant. Running a metal fab shop, so I had to look after the guys, had to look after orders. I was doing design work and a lot of CAD drawing. And when you do 3D CAD drawings, you need two hands. It's the easiest way to do it. You have this one hand turns the part over on the screen, and the other one selects things and adjusts them. So I had to learn to do all that one-handed. They moved my office, which was 100 kilometers from my home. They moved it home for me. And it was the first time I'd ever worked at home. And I was in so much pain at the time with my arm that it was very distracting. And I remember my boss saying, Dave, if you can get 2 or 3 hours a day at the moment and knock over some of these tasks, he said, we'll be happy. But number one was to actually teach myself how to do my work again. So I managed to do that. So I was really proud of myself being able to do things one-handed and under so much distraction from pain. I used to suffer when I was younger from migraine, and you just can't function. I had a mate who was addicted to painkillers. So I went, I'm going to keep away from all of them drugs that they give me. They give you a handful of drugs out of hospital and say, this is to manage the pain, off you go. I just went, you know what, I'm going to keep that down to a very minimum.
But one day,
I'd got up in the morning and I had a monster migraine, and I had a couple of Penadine Forte.
That's a painkiller that's not sold in the US that contains basically Tylenol and codeine.
I thought, that'll calm it down, I'll be fine. And nothing. It would not even dull anything.
His partner went to work and his daughter went to school. So Dave was home alone.
And I went, you know what? I'm going to have a couple of endone as well. So I had a couple of morphine and still nothing. And my partner, before she went to work, she made me a cup of tea and some toast. I had the toast. I sat at the kitchen table. I had something to eat. And I think it's once that hit my stomach and it started digesting that, it started digesting the drugs as well. And by the time I finished two slices of toast and a cup of tea, the whole room was spinning. Like, I could not stand up. I had to slide from my chair to the ground and crawl to the lounge room on my hands and knees. Two knees and one hand, and crawl to a reclining chair in the lounge room and recline the chair and sit there with the room spinning for about 4 hours. Like, it was the worst experience of my life. I thought, I'm going to die from a drug overdose here. And it was just painkillers. And that, so that enforced straight away that I don't want this experience. Painkillers are horrible. So I switched down to just paracetamol and just learned to live with the pain. Somebody asked me about it a few years ago about dealing with pain every day. And I said, well, I now just consider it like white noise. It's just, to me, pain is just like background noise now. And I just go, it's there. But if I don't focus on it, it doesn't become an issue to me. You know, this is 15 years since my shark attack, and I'm still in not bad pain on a daily basis, but there are days, and most days there'll be some sort of pain still. And you go, wow, that's 15 years of that.
We'll be right back.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry. I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Dave wasn't allowed to use his hand for 10 weeks. And when that time was up, it was time to get the stitches out.
They pulled all of the bandages and the cast off and they said, right, bend your wrist. And I'm holding my arm out like basically straight and I'm going, yeah, I'm bending my wrist. And they go, no, bend your wrist. And I go, I'm bending my wrist. And they said, wiggle your fingers. And I'm going, yep, I'm wiggling my fingers. And that was the movement I had. I had nothing. Yeah. My whole arm was just frozen solid. And so they started forcing everything. And if I was thought I was suffering from pain before, that was even a whole new level. And then lo and behold, I got a new gift that I hadn't never had in my life before. I fainted. So pain brings me to fainting. You know, up until that point in my life, I could break my leg and walk home because I needed to get home. I would put up with the pain for that. But even the guy pulling the stitches out of my arm, and the outside of my arm, there was something like 49 stitches. There was a huge amount of stitches on the outside. You got about third or fourth stitch. He goes, Dave, are you all right? And I goes, I'm not sure. I'm really hot. And he goes, I think you're going to. And that was all I remember him saying. I'd have passed out. He went, and then when I come through, he goes, you know, you passed out. And I go, no, I didn't know I passed out. And he said, how long have you done that? And I said, never passed out in my life. And then I went, man, this sucks. I've always been able to deal with stuff. And now I've got this new gift that I'm going to pass out whenever I have pain.
So his physical recovery was throwing him for a loop. But Dave's subconscious was also messing with him.
And then all the other fun things start happening, like the bad dreams and all of them things that are part of the recovery. Because you're not sleeping well to start off with, because every time you roll over in bed, you're landing on your arm and that's hurting. And then there was one day, I think Deb might have been out mowing the lawn. My dog was laying beside me in the lounge room. And I think somebody must have walked past the front of the house and the dog barked. And then I woke up screaming. And I went, wow, that's strange. And then Deb came in the house and she goes, you know, you do that a lot during the night as well.
Oh.
I went, wow, I need to look into this. So I went to a psychologist and tried to work out what was going on. And it's just, you know, it's normal behavior, a new normal behavior for me. And then I tried to figure out what was waking me up. And there was a silly dream I was having, but I was jumping off the rock that I jumped off the afternoon I went and got attacked. I had a surfboard in my hand and I don't think I was screaming. I was shouting out to myself from the car park, don't jump, you know, and that was the screaming, was me screaming out, don't jump, don't go surfing, you know, that was me warning myself not to do it. I guess once you be able to put some sort of logic behind what's going on in your mind, you can sort of come to terms with things a little bit.
His psychologist also helped him have some grace for himself.
She gave me some of the best advice that I've ever had. And that was, she said, so if you feeling uncomfortable when you're in the ocean, which did happen obviously initially, plus when I started surfing, getting back, she said, you do have the power to just get out. You don't have to be a man and say, because I'm going in the ocean, you know, I have to be in the ocean and I have to prove to everyone that I can still do this. She said, you can get out if it's uncomfortable and go back in later on if you feel better then. And that was as simple as that information it was really good. But yeah, the best thing I got from her was her not pretending to have the answers. You know, you expect to go to a psychologist and walk in there and learn everything and you're out and you're fine again. But it's what I would say is she taught me ways to look at my own mind and my own body and go, right, this is not feeling good for you. So you need to do something now before it gets worse. So,
sorry to make this about me for just a second, but in 2010, I was not even swimming. I was standing with the water up to my knees in the Gulf of Mexico, and a stingray cut my leg. I had to get 13 stitches, and now I do not go in the water unless I can see the bottom. Dave, on the other hand, wasted no time getting back on the proverbial horse.
The first time back in the water would have been the Saturday after I got out of hospital. We went down the beach. I think my daughter and her boyfriend were with us at the time. And it was a beautiful day and just went down the beach so I could have a look at the ocean. I felt the need to. Yeah, I walked out in the water and every bit of seaweed in the water was a shark. It was the funniest thing, like the strangest experience. And it was as scary as, it's as scary as it gets. So I got out and I went, wow, that was freaky. Plus mates were pulling up on the beach and having a chat with me to see how it was going, because obviously they hadn't seen me since I was attacked. Deb, my partner, she grabbed her surfboard and went out for a surf. Just ran straight past me with her board and went out for a surf. That was her way of saying, it's not the scariest place in the world. I'm still okay to go out there. And without actually saying anything, she said a lot. I went, you know what? She, by doing that, she's right, you know, the ocean is fine. But because my arm was still in a cast, I couldn't go out very far anyway. So I just thought, well, bugger it. So I walked out as deep as I possibly could. Yeah, stood there and enjoyed the water for a while. And I thought that was a good experience. And then, yeah, we'd go down the beach most weekends and Deb would be out surfing and I'd be sitting on the sand hating it.
Hating it because you were scared for her, or hating it because you wished you were out there?
Because I couldn't get out there, yeah. I was saying to myself, as soon as I can do a one-arm push-up, I'll be able to get up on my board. As soon as I can get a one-arm push-up, I'll figure out how to balance a board and get to my feet with one arm. And it was my brother that actually rang me up and he goes, oh, so you're surfing yet? And I said, no, I can't move my hand and I got no movement and my arm's killing me. He goes, well, suck it up, princess. So it was that following Saturday and I went, you know what? Deb was out there surfing and I thought, I'll have a crack at this. So I actually, even though my arm was in like a half cast thing, I got a couple of ankle straps and strapped them around my arm and put a stick there between them to make like another splint to support my arm. And then got a roll of 100 mile an hour tape out and taped my arm up to the stick to make sure everything was really stiff. Because I was trying to do one arm push-ups, I was failing miserably. But I figured out if I could use my elbow to take some of the weight on my bad arm, then I could use my good arm to get myself up. So yeah, I went out and after about an hour of nosediving the board and falling off every time I tried to get to my feet, I think by then Deb had given up on me and she'd got out. So I was sitting out there on my own trying to catch waves and I finally got one and it was a crappy little wave, but I stood up and it was probably, I'd say, one of the best waves of my life because it was like, I can still surf, you know, so that was the next hurdle over and done with. And I run up the beach, you know, cheering like a little kid, crying my eyes out. Yeah, Deb gave me a hug and one of my mates and his wife are walking up the beach and he come up to me, he goes, was that first time? And I go, yeah. And so they all give me a hug too. So it was like, it was a sort of a special moment to say, I can still do this.
The shark attack wasn't Dave's first water-related injury, and unfortunately, it wouldn't be his last.
I was in the surf. I was on a stand-up paddleboard, and I took it out because I didn't think the waves were very big, and there was no one out there, so I'm paddling out on my own, and this big wave come through, and as I went to break over the top of the wave, it broke, and the paddleboard smashed me in the chest. I think I broke three ribs and punctured my lung. Well, I actually split my lung. I didn't puncture it, split my lung, and the pain...
Remember Dave's new reaction to pain?
As soon as the pain hit me, like I had that whole feeling is I'm about to pass out and I'm in the ocean. So the number one fear is do not pass out in the ocean. So I managed to grab hold of the leg rope of the board with both hands as tight as I could. So that if I did pass out, at least my head was still above water. And I just grabbed hold of the back of the board and let the waves wash me back to the beach. And I'm rolling around in the, because like I was in so much pain from the broken ribs, I couldn't breathe. And Deb was talking to a friend on the beach and saying, my dog, Mojo, he come running down. And so he's licking my face while I'm rolling over in the sand. And Deb's friend said, well, I think Dave, you think Dave's all right? And she goes, oh, yeah, he's just mucking around with the dog, you know. And then she's looked over and here I've got blood running out of my mouth from the lung. And she goes, oh, I don't think he's all right. Yeah, so we off to hospital again.
How long after the attack was that?
This would have been 2020. So this is a number of years after the attack. And the surgeon came and looked at me and he said, Dave, if I give you some instructions and you follow them explicitly, we won't need to be opening you up. He said, but if you don't follow them explicitly, you will be back in here for an emergency surgery and you will be in a lot of pain for a long time. And I go, righto, I can do whatever you tell me to do. So you give it to me. And at the same time, the emergency ward started buzzing that something was going on.
Dave had a friend that was a nurse at the hospital.
My mate came over and he said, Dave, we've just got the first case of COVID in the hospital. He said, and it's in the room a few up. And he said, what are you doing? I said, can I get out of here? So nearly passing out in the water was something I went, wow, this is So now I'm really aware of hurting myself. Hopefully it's getting better over the years because I haven't passed out for a little bit now, so that's good.
Yeah, but also you don't want to be put in a position to find out if pain makes you pass out.
That's right. So. No, I don't want to be in that anymore, no.
So Dave got through pain management and faced any fear of the water. He was back at work. Everything was easy, breezy, beautiful. Except it wasn't.
Everything was just getting better and better in my life, I thought. But then I was away working down at Newcastle, and that was quite often part of my job where I'd drive a couple of hours and I'd work all day, then I'd drive home. And it was one day coming home. And it, for me, it seems to be, I don't know whether it's songs or that's lyrics in songs, but there was a song, I can't remember what it was, but there was a song on the radio. And the next thing I was beside the road, pulled up, and it was like my life had fallen apart. And it was like, wow, where did this come from? And I guess that's when I found out that I had post-traumatic stress as well. And up until then, I was doing pretty good. I, you know, very emotional. I've been very emotional since the attack, but I've always kind of been a little bit like that anyway, but more so now. But yeah, when everything becomes horrible, and I guess that's what depression is, it was just like everybody's trying to do the right thing for me, but nothing works. It's just, yeah. So then I had to start looking at my, once again, looking at my life and going, well, I've got all these things to be grateful for. So you can't fall apart. The one thing that stood out, and I often say it, is when I was going to have a bad day for some reason, I'd start thinking about my first daughter who passed away.
Tia was born 2 months premature, and her heart wasn't fully formed. After months in the NICU, they were able to bring her home, but she contracted pneumonia, and she passed away at 9.5 months old.
So I went, wow, I'm thinking about Tia today. So today is going to be a tough day. So I went, well, I get to think about my daughter all day today. So that's a good day. So I try to turn something bad into something good. And like not long after that, I was working away from home. So I would go to work on Monday morning, get home Friday night. So being alone, you know, when you're used to having family around you all the time, being alone all the time is horrible.
Yeah.
So I would spend the time that I was alone either exercising, surfing, talking to Deb every day. But if I'd had a tough week, Deb would know it when I got home, because when I got home, we had a hug. And if I was not going to let go, she knew it was a bad week. So she would just hug me for as long as it took to take that pain away. But yeah, so it was tough. Like it was a tough realization that here I was thinking that everything was better in my life and getting better and I'm trying to get back to a normal life again. And then shit, there's this other stuff. And what it seemed to do, because I've had other traumas in my life, and I often put the analogy that all them other traumas as I've grown up in my life, I've just thrown in the basket. The shark attack took that basket and emptied it out in front of me and said, deal with that. And that was enlightening, to say the least, I guess, to know that you can hide this stuff, but you can never get away from it. And it comes back to get you. And I'm probably, I'm in a pretty good place now, and I'm happy with that, and I'm happy the way I am. And like I say, I get emotional. I show my emotions in public. It's who I am. And by showing my vulnerability, I've seen the best in other people as well. And I've seen, once again, as I say, I use the analogy, I've seen big, tough guys cry in front of me when they realize it's okay not to be okay all the time.
But the process of relating to other people who have been through similar things didn't start with a big, tough guy. It started with a woman in her early 20s.
The day I came out of hospital, I got to sit down with that girl who was attacked a week prior to myself. And that one conversation that we had there was quite astounding, to say the least. And we both had injuries to our left arm. We both had been hit on the right side of our head. I have to say her injuries were a lot worse than me. But when we were talking about the attack itself, it was so familiar for her story as what mine was to me, that it was just like listening to me telling my own story. And it was straight away, she knew what I was saying. I could see it in her eyes. She knew what I was going to say next, and me the same. So that we had that instant connection. And And we did quite a while after. We would phone up every week, at least once or twice a week, every week to keep in touch to see how we were doing. And
since relating to this survivor went so well, Dave saw an opportunity to help other survivors.
I heard of another shark attack not long after mine. It was a bit further down the coast. So I rang up the hospital and I just said, look, if he wants to chat, I can tell him some of what I've been through in the last few months, you know, and because I thought if I can tell him some of the experience I'm having, maybe he'll be forewarned for them. And because I was starting to do a few news stories, it was still obviously very high in the media. I said, if I do a news story with you, can you put me in touch with whoever else you're talking to? So I would eventually get in touch with them and I would drive to visit them, or we'd talk phone and we'd have them conversations. And obviously it always starts the same, what happened to you, what happened to me? And then talk about, well, how have things been since your attack? How have you dealt with the nightmares and all them other fun things that come along? And what we actually found was I was hoping that they had an answer for me. And I think they were hoping that I had an answer for them. And so by doing that, one guy put it eloquently, we've actually become the answer now.
The answer, as that guy put it, is called Bite Club. Not to be confused with the 2018 Australian crime series Bite Club, about a serial killer going after shark attack survivors. Dave's Bite Club is a support group for survivors and families of victims of bite-related attacks. So not just sharks, but bears and alligators and other bitey things. Because who better than someone that's been through it to help?
You know, if one person is suffering nightmares, if two people are suffering nightmares, if 100 people are suffering nightmares, you know that it's pretty common that you are going to get nightmares because it's everybody else has. So there's simple things like that that I've found that have just been so good.
Dave had found 6 other survivors when they became a formalized group.
We actually brought 7 of us together and we actually went, I think I might have told you, we went swimming with sharks.
I don't know if you caught that. The group of 7 shark attack survivors decided to meet in person and go swimming with sharks.
That was the first time Bite Club actually did anything together, and we couldn't afford to do it on our own. We got a TV company to do it for us, and they paid for plane flights of like a couple of $1,000 each. But I negotiated when we did that. We wanted set times where we had nothing but just us together. Because, yes, you can talk in front of cameras, but there's other stuff that you need to do that you don't want to be filmed. And it worked perfectly. And I describe it as a family reunion with family that you didn't know you had. You know, the first, there were 7 of us, the Magnificent 7, we named it after that just because there were 7 of us. And, you know, from that one event, we just went, we've got to keep doing this because, you know, there is so much benefit for everybody. Yeah, now when we do get together, if we can get, you know, 20 of us or 60 of us or whatever we can get together, it is just magic times.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'll see you in 2 weeks.